Episode 179 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 12th, 2018. Split screen. Guys, we're talking split screen shows this week. Shows that have more than one reality.
Duality, if you may.
Yeah, a show about a split marriage, a divided house, a show about parallel worlds, a show about a cat and mouse, an assassin, and a spy.
So this isn't just about the old Thomas Crown Affair?
No.
Or like some Soderbergh kind of stuff?
No, but
love me
I
some
would watch that.
Thomas Crown Affair.
And then, of course, Alex Inc., which is about what happens when you split screen. You can watch the terrible TV show alongside the pretty good podcast.
Oh.
Hey, that's a nice idea. That might have helped that.
It probably would have helped. Anyway, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And I'm Kyle.
And we are without Grant this time, so if anything sounds weird, it's because we're running the show.
Flying solo. Actually, there's three of us.
There's three of us flying.
Flying
us
trio. On
a solo flight. Trio flight.
And before we get started, our usual plugs. Want to mention, if you want to support us for free, you can go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. We'll read it here on the show, and that's a great free way to support us. If you want to support us with a little money, we would appreciate that. You can go to patreon.com/TVDudes. Kick in a buck an episode. It's not that much. We don't have many episodes.
Yeah.
And for that, you get free bonus content every week. We do a podcast about, you know, a little 20, 30-minute podcast every week on other topics. And
don't they get access to all of the bonus content when they sign up?
They do. So much.
You could just give us like a couple bucks, cancel, but then listen to a ton of podcasts in your little time, you know?
Also, Randy, there's a third way.
There is a third way.
Ah.
For those of you that miss Randy's third ways that annoyed Grant, you can contribute to the Patreon, and we will make Randy come up with third ways again just to annoy Grant.
I do miss third ways. I feel like I had a million that I never used back then, but now I can't think of any of them.
Make two TV Dudes third way again.
Yes. Yeah.
We do want to say a shout out to Sean, who is a new patron. Thank you for joining us, Sean.
Oh, yeah.
And also, we are part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
And you might know we have a variety of other shows on this network. We've got, I don't have a list in front of me, but it's a bunch of shows. Les, you know some of the shows on this network. You do some of the shows on this network.
Yes. My other show, The Good Die Young, is on Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record Network.
As is Randy's other show about one season show about dogs. Beach Cop Detectives.
Yep, all
Beach Cop Detectives.
And there's the This Is Us show, pilot watching, Film TV. There's a Star Trek Discovery pod that's got some Trek noob on it.
Yeah, some guy who's never even seen.
He's never seen
no difference between a Klingon and a Vulcan.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
So go to Permanent Record, check out our network, check out other podcasts, and should we have some news?
Oh.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's have some news. All right, so some renewals here. Jessica Jones officially gets a season 3, so guess that's not over.
There's so much sadness to keep plumbing.
I know, it's like you heard the crickets when you finished that story. It's like, oh.
Yeah, did you guys watch season 2?
I am still like an episode finishing it, I think, or two episodes finishing it.
But the point of what I was saying is I'm not excited to go through it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that's a Marvel Netflix show. The only reason I skipped Punisher entirely, the only reason I've watched this at all is that I love Kristen Ritter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Punisher
apparently,
was kinda cool. I like that.
Apparently Netflix is not done with Marvel just yet.
Mm-hmm.
In better news, HBO has ordered Barry Season 2 and Silicon Valley Season 6, and that's great. I am loving Sundays right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I really enjoyed where Barry's off to, and I love the commitment to put a sixth season on Silicon Valley already.
Yeah.
But just know you guys have it. Do it.
Well, it's great that they got rid of Ehrlich, and the show is just fine without him. And he's off being a crazy person.
Yeah, calling in fake bomb threats.
Yeah. That disintegration happened fast.
Some people, right? You know, they get a little HBO fame and it goes straight to their head.
Star Trek Discovery, we got a couple bits of news from Star Trek Discovery. They have cast Inhuman Star, and which is a cruel way to refer to him. Anson Mount.
That's what he's known for the
it's
rest.
Gonna
of
haunt you for the rest of your shit.
Yeah. So Anson Mount is going to be cast as Captain Pike of the USS Enterprise, which I actually saw Anson Mount in Hell on Wheels, AMC's Western, and he's really good. You wouldn't know that from watching Inhumans.
Man, I'm going to trust you on this because I was disappointed in that news. The only thing I've really seen him in is the one episode of Inhumans that they made.
And that's no good for anybody. Yeah. Oh, they made more than one.
No,
we just
did
don't.
Not.
I promise.
They did not. That's B-roll footage that got out somehow.
I literally almost said, he'll forever be known from that pilot. And I'm like, oh, wait, it went past pilot.
Yeah, it's funny because...
it's got a season two, right?
To me, this is great news. To me, this is fantastic news because not only do I think Anson Mount will be a good Captain Pike, more importantly, this pretty much put the last nail in the coffin of Inhumans, which means I don't have to watch season two.
Yes, yeah. Because what was the bet?
The bet was if they came back, I had to watch a review every episode.
Oh,
yeah. Also exciting, not on the Discovery, but on another ship on the Discovery show, Tig Notaro is going to play an engineer of another starship.
Oh, that's so great.
That's really cool.
Yeah. We got a little bit of Star Trek news, and then we got some good stuff. No, she's going to be really entertaining. I love, who was the big guest star that first season from The Office? I always forget his name.
Oh, Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, I really loved what they did with him.
I did too.
And I hope that it's not just a one and done. I hope that she's kind of peppered throughout two or three.
Yeah, that makes sense. She may be a little mini arc. I think the Rainn Wilson's a good comparison. I bet it's going to be similar to that.
Yeah.
He was there for two episodes. Joe Hill's Nosferatu TV series has been greenlit at AMC. Anybody read this book?
I have not. Mm. It's an alternate take on vampires.
You know, that's what we thought. I talked about this on my podcast, The Roguecast, this week. And we were like, no, we hadn't read it. So we just guessed it was vampires. It is, in fact... I mean, I guess there's something about a vampire about it, but there's an immortal who like drains children's souls to power his something. I don't know. It was weird.
Joe, cool. I mean, this is Lock and Key Joe Hill, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen King's kid.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
It sounds cool. I was afraid that actually makes me much happier. I was afraid it was a Strain knockoff.
It's not the Strain. Yeah, yeah.
What is up with the way they're spelling this? Capital N, capital O, capital
that's
S.
Why I guessed it was vampires.
Yeah. The number 4, a capital A, and then the number 2.
So it is.
He's Nosferatu. He's Nosferatu too quick.
I believe he has a car with that license plate, and I think maybe the Nos is also a play on Nos from Fast and the Furious. But that may just because I've seen all the Fast and the Furious.
Stop
movies.
It, Randy! I'm going to put my fist through my eyeballs.
And I want it to be that. I want it to be about an immortal soul sucker who street races.
Oh,
on the
I
weekends.
Want him to put the knight in Knight Rider.
He may suck your blood, but he's all about family.
Oh man, a vampire with a cool car that talks to him, like the skull in Dresden Files, but like in the dashboard.
Yeah, I like it.
Man,
we're definitely pitching a better show than this is going to be.
Yes,
even if the show's good. The vampire with talking car is a better pitch than anything they're going to get. Everything Sucks has been canceled by Netflix, and I guess that sucks.
Yeah.
Or not.
I loved Everything Sucks.
Me too.
And, I mean, I know I was on board with it quicker than some other folks that I showed it to or subjected to it.
It took me fully half.
It has
season.
A weird back and forth on its tone. It, along with a lot of other shows, also does the Office push in.
Yeah.
And I hate that shit.
Yeah.
But I loved Everything Sucks. I still thought it. I'm sad.
Well, and if I can paint it, you know, from a different way, what is the worst thing for child actors? Early success. It ruins their lives.
So these guys are all going to be very successful.
They dodged a bullet.
Well,
yeah.
Some of these kids, I mean, some of the scenes that they were called to do were beautifully acted. So I honestly, maybe this frees them up to not get stuck as these characters. Like, maybe this really pops these kids' careers.
They're all going to be in season 3 of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think we all wound up liking Everything Sucks, I think, but I don't think any of us were super excited to see where it goes.
No,
like, I was mostly worried they were going to fuck it up.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of indies anyway. I've always enjoyed that about British television, seeming to know when to stop some of these things. Not that they don't also run shit forever, but
right.
Peep Show.
But yeah, I'm fine with this moving on. There's so many other Netflix shows in the pipeline. All these kids are going to get work. That's great.
So Why the Last Man has been picked up as a pilot by FX.
For real this time?
This has been in development for a while.
Thank God, that's been news forever, right?
So it's going to be Ada Mashaka Kroll will be co-showrunner with Michael Green, who's been developing it. I don't know either of those names. Oh, Green? Okay.
Yeah.
Green co-wrote the screenplays for Logan and Blade Runner 2049, developed American Gods with Brian Fuller. Kroll has worked on Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
Mm.
And the director, Melina Matsoukas, is a well-known music video director, but has helmed episodes of Insecure and Master of None, both of which are pretty stylish.
Okay, that's pretty stylish.
Sure.
And, yeah, Michael Green's name I knew. I've seen him interviewed with Fuller about stuff.
So
that could be cool. I loved Why the Last Man.
I love Why the Last Man, too. I can totally see it.
What about the listener who's not familiar with Why the Last Man or this news story, which I feel like does pop up every couple months?
Yeah. So Why the Last Man is a all the men are dead, but one, Y, traverses a world of women exploring gender, race, class, and survival.
His name's Yorick.
His name is Yorick, not Y.
Ah. Yeah. But he gets, you know.
Also the Y chromosome.
Yeah, and the Y chromosome.
Nice.
Yep.
And more stuff comes of it, like, you know, there's astronauts in space. What happened to them? Nobody, like, you know, but the shit's hit the fan, and you got bands of Amazon women and a lot of other, I mean, it's a kind of post-apocalyptic, but.
But it's also sort of about the sociological issues of what happens when the world is all women.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting.
Yeah, procreation starts to become a desperate, like, what happened? What, we got to start thinking about
or
this.
Or die off, yeah.
And there's some twists from the comic that I adored. I really love. There's also just fun characters. I loved the art from the comic, but Yorick has a – I think he's an escape artist.
Yeah, he's an escape artist.
Like amateur magician escape artist.
Yeah.
His mom is a lit professor, so that's why he's named Yorick.
Yeah.
And he's super well-read and everything.
But he's kind of a loser.
Yeah, and he's got a monkey.
Yeah,
he's a loser, but he's the last man?
Yeah, and that's kind of
he doesn't know why. He didn't do anything to...
Yeah, he didn't do anything to be the last man.
To be spared this plague.
Was it an event, or was it gradual?
So it is an event, and they explain it in the graphic novels. It was kind of the big mystery. And honestly, I wasn't super satisfied with the explanation they gave. But it didn't really matter, because the rest of the story was so good. What's interesting is how things have changed for... Even in the time since this came out in the early 2000s. Green says... after the 26th election, he's like, it couldn't not be political, and I had to embrace it. I had to find my way in. I had to find a way to channel my own dismay, disappointment, and rage into it while still keeping it what it is. So the notion of post-Trump, post-Me Too, Why the Last Man, that's interesting.
All right. I'm cool with that. I'm also happy to note that this is Brian K. Vaughan's source material, but I did not hear Brian K. Vaughan's name.
He is involved. He is one of the executive producers.
Just don't let him write these.
You know what? His work on Lost was great.
But Under the Dome and...
Yeah, Under the Dome was terrible.
There's a more recent one.
Well, I mean, there's Runaways, but he wasn't actually involved in Runaways.
Oh, okay. Because that went off the fucking
And I
rails.
Also like Runaways, so I disagree with you and Grant both on that.
Wait, you do like Runaways?
I like Runaways.
The first half of Runaways was amazing, and I...
See, I'm at the halfway point, and I'm scared to go forward, because right now I still really love it.
I liked it. I thought it was fine. Okay. But yeah, I'll be curious. You need to join me on this, Kyle, because I'm one man against two here.
I have teamed up with you in a cage fight in the past.
That's right.
I'm up to the challenge.
Although, if you watch it and you hate it, then I am totally done. I'm outnumbered. That's
I know.
It.
You're doubling down here.
I know. It's the only shot I got. All right. And finally, I am not okay with this plan. So Westworld creators are offering this crazy thing to Reddit where they're going to say, they're like, if you guys agree, we're going to post a video that lays out the pilot and twists and turns of season two. Everything. The whole thing up front. And that way, you guys will know what's a theory and what's a spoiler. So basically, they're like, let's tell everybody on Reddit what all the spoilers are for Westworld Season 2. There's no way that could go wrong.
Yeah, I read a little bit of their reasoning on this, that shit gets out anyway, and that they found by, you know...
They want the fans to become protective like they have been with Game of Thrones, but some fans are. Some fans are dicks.
Yeah, did they not see Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
Well, so I've seen this work. They made something like this work for Westworld Season 1. Before they announced the show, they had all these ads in like Forbes and like luxury magazines, like magazines targeted at the top 1%, and just very vague, come visit Westworld.
Okay.
Like... targeting the people who in the show would go to that as a way to promote the show. And then if you like looked at the ads, there were certain clues, and then you got an image, and the image actually spoiled the Man in Black before you know, we had seen any of that yet.
Hmm.
So, but they're taking it a step further here.
Yeah.
This is like This is like when, you know, the Harry Potter books would come out and then somebody would spray paint Dumbledore dies across, you know, a bridge overpass or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just daring the fans of the, to go ahead and spoil people because some people get off on that shit.
I feel like this also just feeds into my almost unshakable at this point opinion that Reddit's terrible.
Yeah. No, Reddit's terrible.
Like people can see, like there's, I mean, that's like saying that, you know, books are terrible. Like that. I get that. There's a lot of shit on Reddit that there's a lot of different shit on Reddit, but and people keep constantly, hey man, you know, you got to check out this subreddit thread. As soon as the word Reddit comes out of their mouth, I'm immediately like,
Yeah, I kind of feel like about Twitter too, though. So I might just be an old man.
Yeah, I feel it's a sign of my age.
All about the MySpace for me.
Oh, yeah, I did love the meme that went around this week of Tom, the classic Tom picture from MySpace. It was like your face when you're not being grilled by Congress.
All right. Good. And on that note, we'll take a break and we'll come back with our TV discussion. So we are going to talk, we're going to give you spoilers here, just a spoiler warning up front for Counterpart. We're going to talk the entire season of Counterpart on Stars. We're going to talk the first couple episodes of Splitting Up Together, Alex Inc., and The Crossing on ABC. And then we're going to talk the first episode of Killing Eve on BBC America. So you have been pre-warned. If you're diehard anti-spoiler on any of those shows, when we start talking about it, you want to skip ahead.
No, Alex Inc. spoilers. No. Right.
Yeah, Alex dies.
Who gives him advice this episode on his podcast?
All right, so let's start with Counterpart, which we talked about a little bit right at the beginning.
Yeah, but it was kind of hard to talk about at the beginning.
Well, because it's such a sort of slow, dark, dense show.
Yeah. I follow the first season showrunner, Amy Berg. I follow her on social media, and she has been great about posting all the different materials they had in the writer's room. This show was actually in development for a long time.
Okay.
And so, and like with casting signed on and everything, they just, for weird out of their hands network reasons, they just didn't like, oh, hey, you guys are going to have a few more months to work on this.
Okay. All right.
And so they really, they made employee handbooks for those jobs and shit.
Oh.
But the stacks of books that she keeps posting pictures of are all like John le Carré novels and biographies of him and spy craft and like. They're either spy novels, like old Cold War spy novels, or books on spy craft.
Well, that's what I think is interesting about this is that it is about a very sci-fi parallel world concept. It's set in the modern age. Mm-hmm. There's cell phones and all that. But it feels like 60s spy stuff.
Yeah, it's a very – I was thinking about that in the last few episodes. Like it's a very – these people are doing small espionage. Like it's very Cold War.
Yeah.
There is not an invasion. Of world to world,
not yet.
Yet, because there is this constant diplomatic pushback back and forth, and there's also, I mean, we find out across here that there's sleeper cells, that there's Project Indigo. I want to know more about the actual crossing, which someone says it towards the end of the season. It when the crossing appeared.
Yeah.
There's a space. There's rocks you crawl across that they've painted a stripe on and shit.
Yeah.
But that space, I want to know if that space appeared. Did that void, did the cavern void appear?
Right.
Like, was that solid rock and then it wasn't? Like,
well, and the thing that we didn't know when we first started talking about was that when the crossing happened, that it created some kind of mess, super flu over on their world. And killed a bunch of people, they think that's what happened.
Yeah, we are really getting into spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they definitely, by the second episode, I feel like they totally changed the direction of the show with adding that outbreak aspect.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because in 96, there was a flu outbreak that did not affect our world, but did affect the other world.
Yeah.
They've also been clear that it's not that there were always two worlds. There was the a happened. World, and it doubled.
Yeah.
Wait a second. I totally thought you guys started talking about the crossing just then.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we have two parallel. Well, not parallel, but
we're talking about Counterpart.
Counterpart.
We're talking about the parallels between the two shows.
Yeah. Mm. Now, did you watch Counterpart, Kyle?
I have not watched Counterpart, okay. And I feel so ashamed. Yes. I've been insanely busy, but
spoiling the fuck out of Counterpart.
Yeah, we're
spoiling
Counterpart.
I love spoilers, man. So, I love them.
So, I have to say, even as a fan of sort of slow burn espionage kind of stuff, as I watched this. I got more and more into it as I watched every episode, but I definitely felt every time I was watching it, there was a point at which I was like, just fucking tell me what's going on. Just tell me. Because the slow burn and the sort of the deliberate obtuseness of it all did get to me from time to time.
I wanted Pope brought, like Stephen Rees' character, Alexander Pope, I wanted him brought more to the forefront a little faster, two episodes earlier.
Yeah.
Because I did the same. It's 10 episodes long, and it feels longer.
Yeah, it feels like a long. There's some great moments. Like there are some super great. Like when J.K. Simmons gets to play against himself in that scene where he's like they confront each other about what they've been up to in their in their worlds. That is like an actor's
dream. And he admits that he knew.
Yeah.
About his go partner.
That was all super great. The scene where what is his wife's name? Miriam. Where her new boyfriend, the dude from the other side, confronts Pope in the courtyard, and that gets real tense. Like there's so many scenes like that throughout.
Yeah, there's a moment where when they find the Project Indigo camp or school, and they J.K. Simmons and Howard finds, and it's Howard Prime, so it's the milquetoast wussy Howard, finds the. Pile of kids, basically, and pulls the sheet, and you know what he's about to fucking find.
Yeah.
Like, he pulls that sheet, and they do almost the whole thing on J.K. Simmons' face, and it's not just one of the most beautiful, like, seeing something horrible break on an actor that I've ever seen. It is a face that the other Howard, I would believe, is incapable of making.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's why you get J.K. Simmons for this.
I'm watching it going, man, I don't think the other you, I'm sure which Howard you are sure which Howard you are right now, because I don't think the other Howard, he would not react like that.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And he does that. There's several scenes like that.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, just watching J.K. Simmons act on this is pleasure enough for it. But I also really like the stuff they did with Harry Peter and his wife.
Yeah, Peter Quayle.
That's a big reveal, and it pays off really nicely.
And I did not expect him to go the way he goes with
me
it.
Me neither.
There's this is going to build to a huge spoiler, what I'm about to say, but this show paid off something that is one of those things that I yell at screens sometimes. It's not exactly a trope, but just a character frustration that I had. It happened in the garden when he was going to get the drop on Pope.
Yeah.
And you hear another gun click and there's another guy behind him.
Right.
And Pope's like, you know, look, you. I sat through that whole scene thinking, you're a spy. I mean, you're a hardcore spy.
Yeah.
You know what's at stake. And all it takes to fuck up these people's plans, there's so much human behavior assumption that has to go into spycraft.
Yeah.
All it takes to fuck up these people's plans is for him to go, I know I'm probably going to get shot immediately upon doing this, but
I had the same thought. Is it the just shoot him in the face?
Just shoot him in the fucking face and
I had
take
the same
it.
Same thought.
And whatever happens, happens.
Yes. Yeah.
So what, he shoots you, you're really not that big a deal. But killing Alexander Pope in this yard right now will fuck things.
Yeah.
And that's all I could think. And so there were a couple of moments like that. Like after that, that was the one where it really came to a head for me.
Yeah.
But there were several moments in the show where I thought, these plans are so delicately balanced that all it would really take is a couple of, it's part of the reason I don't believe in, I have a hard time believing in conspiracies.
Right.
It requires a bunch of people to not ever have self-interest.
All it needs is one guy to snap and kill someone important.
So,
and then it does.
So Howard.
That was such a great moment.
That was the payoff to that exact feeling. When I realized, oh shit, he's gonna, Pope is going to turn and be done with you right now, and boom, I applauded. It is a slow burn show,
it is a
motherfucker.
Yeah, it is, but when it comes together, like the massacre at the operations building when they come through, super good.
So now
super
that
good.
Oh my god, that was disturbing as shit.
Yeah, it is.
And oh my god, and Toby.
Yeah,
it's not his name.
No, but I know
he will forever be Toby. Richard Schiff.
Thank you. I was blanking on his name. I'm looking for him.
Yeah, he his reaction when his secretary runs by is astonishing. Everybody brings their A game to this show. Yeah. I'm so happy that it is all out now.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm going to say this, like, you've never watched, if you've made it this far in this discussion without watching Counterpart, I'm sorry. But now that it all exists, I feel like some of that slow burn wouldn't be as hard.
I agree. I binged about 6 episodes at a time.
I kept waiting a lag and binging 3 episodes or so.
Yeah, it views better in chunks. It will probably be better altogether.
It was difficult for me to get into the world.
Yeah.
Each time, it was easier for me to stay in the world and then get really. Yeah. I watched the last 3 like not wanting to go to other, like not wanting to do something. No, shut up.
I found the same thing. I was like, okay, one more episode.
Yeah,
yeah. But when I wasn't watching it. It was like, I'll watch something else because
it requires
full attention.
That's the thing. This it's like sitting down to Westworld or something like this requires actual attention.
Full attention.
You don't want to zone out because these people are stage whispering really important shit to each other every once in a while.
Yeah, it's very smart. It's very smart. It's very methodically paced.
You really want to watch people side eye to each other and who's on who, and like who's figuring out what.
Yeah, I go up and down on whether or not I think it's like one of the best shows of the year or if it's just not quite what I want it to be.
It's what I really wanted Rubicon to be.
Yeah, yeah, it's very close.
I'm happier with this than Rubicon. Yeah. I still understand that this is a little more Spy Who Came In from the Cold and less Bourne Identity, and it's not going to appeal to as many people.
Right.
But it hit a lot of right notes for me.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is on Amazon Prime?
Stars.
Stars.
Oh, Stars.
But it probably will be on Amazon Prime.
And it already has. I mean, they've definitely got a season 2.
Yeah.
They're going to Justin Marks, who wrote one of the live-action Jungle Books, he actually created the show but didn't have any television experience in his past, so they paired him with a more experienced showrunner, Amy Berg, and Justin is now fully in control of the show and in cool. good hands.
And you're going to have an interview with Amy Berg up soon.
Yes. So next week, hopefully, I'll get to sit down and have a really spoilery. I talked to her like the week or 2 weeks into the show, and we talked about it a little bit, but it was difficult to discuss.
But now you can talk about the post-show. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Let's jump over to ABC, who premiered 3 new shows this week. And we're going to talk about their 2 sitcoms and their new sci-fi drama.
They're done.
So first of all, let's talk about splitting up together. Kyle, make your defense.
Hi. people are coming down really hard on this show. And like I was telling these guys earlier, okay, I don't love this show. All right. I'm not here to tell you it's a good show. But it got me chuckling a couple times. I got a couple genuine laughs.
Did you remember the moments that made you chuckle?
They were not memorable moments.
Okay, because this was laugh free for me, and I'm curious what.
For real?
But yeah, I never laughed at this.
Well, I did. I love the stuff with the kids. I don't know. That is one thing that ABC tends to have plenty of is child actors that are just so dang cute.
See, I generally they've got Modern Family, they got Blackish, they've done really well. I feel like they missed the mark here. Like, I did not find these kids at all endearing or compelling.
Well, maybe it's the context. So when I started watching this, I'm halfway through the first episode. I looked at this like, oh, could this be a trophy wife?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That's kind of like my standard for
also
that type
great
of a
kids,
show.
By the way,
yeah, awesome kids in that show. And by episode 2, I wasn't convinced either way. But by episode 3, it definitely, I wouldn't say jumps the shark, but takes a strong turn in the. Oh, remember Jenna Fisher on The Office? Remember her unrequited love? How great was that to end every episode with, why doesn't she just kiss the guy?
Are they doing a will they, won't they with her divorced ex-husband?
Bad.
Oh, my God.
Bad.
Because the whole premise is that they're splitting up. That they tried it, it didn't work. Don't give me a will they, won't they between a married couple.
No, they go through so many tropes that we've seen on The Office a million times.
Well, the other thing is like, I had a reaction similar to you, and then I was like, why can't this be Trophy Wife? By which I mean, why can't I have Trophy Wife back instead of this piece of shit?
Bradley Whitford's too good.
I hated this show, and I like Jenna Fisher, but I hated this show. And I think part of it is that it was laugh-free for me. Part of it is the premise is so ugly, and yet they play it off as this
it is a really ugly
thing.
Premise.
Like, oh, we tried it. we can't be together, so I'm gonna go live. We're gonna take turns living in the garage apartment while someone else does the hard work of watching the kids for a week. Ha ha! Funny broken family.
Can I tell you the thing that made us laugh? I'm recalling it.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
Me and Shannon, we're engaged. We're planning a wedding. We're buying a house. We're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And we would watch. And yeah, that awfulness where he would do something to her where it's like, oh, wait, you know you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Or she would do something back and it's like, wait, that's, you know, if you would have asked anybody, they would have told you that's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
So it's like we were kind of laughing at the brick wall they were choosing to run headfirst into every opportunity they were given.
See, I think for me, this is if you did this like you're the worst, where these are people who know each other's weak spots. They've been married for a while, and they know how to hurt each other. And it was like a dark comedy where there's still a little sweetness. But this is so ABC on brand. It feels so empty.
You're the worst is so extreme, this idea, though.
Yeah, right?
I really do think, I don't know, there's this place where trophy wife, because a trophy wife is kind of a bad concept.
Yeah.
But it was done good.
Yeah.
So you just kind of bought into it.
Yeah. I don't know. The other thing, this is Suburgatory's Emily Capek doing this show.
Oh.
This is the person behind Suburgatory, which is why I gave it a shot in the first place.
So, yeah, I didn't watch this, but what I'm picturing would be better, Randy, than would be Dennis Leary paired with, I'm trying to think who a good, like, absolutely crazy ex would be.
Yeah.
The grandma in Once Upon a Time.
Sure.
Or One Day at a Time. One Day at a Time,
okay,
rather.
Yeah. Rita Moreno?
Yeah.
Dang.
And Dennis
Encyclopedia.
Leary, yeah. And so, yeah, they're empty nested, and they decide, yeah, like, we're not going to split up. Like, our retirement doesn't actually support that, but I'm going to move into the garage apartment, and we're going to take turns pretending like we're widowed.
Yeah.
To call it timeshare.
Because I fucking hate you. Yeah. And then they get something god-awful happens, and they get stuck with their grandkids back in the house again. So they've got, like, two little kids.
Yeah.
And so I think that would work better.
That sounds like a much better version of this.
Well, I haven't watched this other sitcom. It was not that?
No, it was not
that.
Oh,
no,
it was not.
Here's the thing. I had forgotten the most disappointing thing. Jenna Fisher was disappointing enough. But Emily Capek did Suburgatory, which was hit and miss from time to time, but was a great show.
Man,
overall.
When I loved it, I loved it. When it was on, it was so good.
And there is no spark in this first three episodes that makes me see any of Suburgatory in this.
Mm-hmm.
None of the sort of the wackiness of Suburgatory. It's just, yeah, it's not
I
great.
I watch Suburgatory now.
Yeah.
I see a little flicker or something.
Do you?
Okay. Well, it was very dim in the third episode.
Maybe you'll stick with it and you can come back and report to
I'll
it.
Give it a fourth, but yeah, I don't have high hopes.
All right. How do you feel about Alex Inc.?
Is this the sci-fi show where a dude quits his job and his family doesn't just like kill him?
The pod crossing?
Yeah, that's it. This is the sci-fi show where a dude decides to quit his lucrative job even though he's got two kids. And go into the world of freelance podcasting.
I can't explain what this shit is as a hobby to other people.
So this show is based on the podcast Startup, which is about this very thing. This actually happened. Alex Blumberg, who was a This American Life contributor and then was part of Planet Money. He was like working for NPR, was an editor, was making good money, quit his job with the permission at least or tacit approval of his wife and their two kids and started a podcast company. And he did this podcast. His first podcast was about starting his company.
Yeah.
And it's called Startup. It's a great podcast. It's really entertaining.
And I do love what he's pitching there because it's the same thing that first clicked for me when I got to join TV Dudes, which was I had always wanted to be on the radio, but the radio is just that one app that your stupid dashboard plays.
Yeah.
And this is radio.
Yeah.
This is what I always thought of as radio girl. Like, I'd like to be on the radio. This is that.
The thing is, the first episode's called The Unfair Advantage, and that's actually from the Startup Podcast. And basically, this is Chris Sacca, the millionaire, is in it, or billionaire, or whatever. He's actually the guy. Like, he was friends with Alex because of a interview they did, and he became sort of his business guru. And he asked him, like, what is your unfair advantage? You know, pitch me on this. And you know, if you have 30 seconds before my cab gets here, how do you pitch me? And he sort of taught Alex to be a business guy. But at the same time, Alex's unfair advantage is he's good at podcasting. He puts together well-produced shows like This American Life
he's
and
got
Serial
experience
and
producing
that kind of stuff. That is different than what we do. That is very different than what we do.
And that's the premise that I like behind this is that, like, yes, it's podcasting, whatever. That's making the show sound like an even bigger you did what?
Yeah,
to quit
yeah.
your job. But really what he's done is quit to become a documentary.
Yeah. Exactly.
An audio documentary maker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that all is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sitcom, they took every possible wrong turn, I think. They added a weird startup office with other wacky startups going on, which everything in this feels like network notes to me. Everything in this feels like some studio exec went, well,
that's
what
right. They basically
this?
Like walk through the scene from Powerless.
Yeah, and that's stupid.
Oh, yeah. It reminded me a lot of that.
And then they have his hapless cousin who's his business guy, and then his secretary who's in love with him, which, by the way, both of those are new elements. Those are bullshit elements added by the studio, I promise you.
Let me say, we talked earlier off mic about how little we liked this show.
Yeah.
I had actually forgotten the R&D office bullshit.
Yeah.
Like all of that. I had actually blocked all that out separately,
like,
and I still didn't like what remained.
No. Yeah. Well, the thing is, you put in all the studio stuff, and it's wacky over the top. It's got the lead from Scrubs, Zach Braff, who I think Les and I were talking off mic about. I don't know where you are, Carl. Are you a Zach Braff fan? Were you a Scrubs fan?
I loved Garden State, and that's about it.
I liked Garden State. I even liked Zach Braff. I was like, you know what? Sure, he's kickstarting a thing, even though he's a millionaire, and that's fine, whatever. But now, after this, I'm like, oh, you only have the one speed. And that's what I realized in this. It's like, he's playing the sort of awkward-y, like, the casting makes sense to me. Alex Bloomberg is sort of this awkward but likable, optimistic dude. Like, it makes sense. But it's so Zach Braff that Alex Bloomberg disappears.
Oh, yeah. I can't do 110% Zach Braff.
No, it's too much. And also, Vicky from The Good Place is his wife, and I like that actress.
Mm-hmm.
But she's given the thankless task of making her seem not crazy for going along with this.
No, I want all the family to walk away from him.
Yeah.
Have you really ever seen that actress, like her IMDb page?
No. Huh?
They really dress her down in both this and The Good Place. She's like a supermodel.
Smoking hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that.
Yep.
You would never guess that was the same person.
Yeah. I mean, she's always super cute. But yeah, I've never seen her.
But
all
no,
hot
they
hot.
Like put her in these baggy sweatshirts and like.
Well, they almost always have her kind of play stern. Like, yeah. You did what crazy thing?
Yeah.
Oh, you men.
The other thing that drives me crazy about this is, again, this all feels like studio notes. This all feels like something that's being that someone said, well, no one's going to watch just a pod. No one's going to watch a show about just about podcasts. Let's make it wackier. What if your crazy cousin fights with your office crush? And what if every episode he gets his kid gives him an inspiring cute moment, and we learn that his kids are the real strength of his family. And I'm like, this guy spends 24 minutes being terrible at his job, and then his kid fixes everything.
Yeah,
and don't do that twice.
I didn't even watch the second episode. I just wanted to punch Zach Braff in the face by the end of it.
It
was
such
everything
a waste.
That I used to tell people. You're being too sensitive. Scrubs works because he's that. I mean, I know it's a shtick, but it works. All of those things don't work for me now. Like, he's not working for me in this, and you can't dial it back because it's him to the core.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad casting. I just don't want to watch it.
It bums me out because I really like the podcast. ABC has a pretty good track record with the comedies, and this was just a misfire on every level.
It also made me feel like, I don't know, shows that remind me that my heart is cold, dead stone. But when Chris Sack is standing on the jet at the end of the first episode, and he's got that 30 seconds to pitch me before I get, like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
What's your unfair advantage? And he looks around and it clicks that, like, oh, wow, yeah, all the prep I've done as a great businessman is nothing. I'm going to pull this out of my head. So tired of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he realizes, like, it's me. It's the fact that I'm a complete clusterfuck. That's my unfair advantage. And I wanted the millionaire to go, no, man, you thought of that right now in the room. Like,
you know what I wish would have happened there? I wish, because that's the part in the show where, all right, now you need to turn and give us a reason to watch in the second episode. He should have just gone, what's your unfair advantage? I've killed a guy.
Yeah.
I've killed a guy.
I know what it feels like to kill a man. Yeah, because I really feel like my family is the equivalent of Ehrlich, say, in Seafood.
Yeah.
And like, this is not going to be the app you work on all next season.
Yeah.
But to find out that they're going to do it again, that's the speed they have. Yeah. So that really is the type of show it is.
Yep.
And it's really not for me.
It's trying really hard to be this heartwarming comedy, and it's not working.
So a guy from radio quit his job and started a really successful audio program.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like there should have been a guy from TV who started like just making his own. I don't know. Actually, can I mention Louis C.K. in this regard?
There's some unfortunate baggage.
Yeah. But, you know, somebody who did something like that guy did.
Yeah. You mean showed his penis to a bunch of women?
It's like, not that thing. No, not guys that did anything like that guy did.
All right. Let's talk about The Crossing, which is a new sci-fi drama starring Steve Zahn.
So, Kyle, you're the reason that I sat down and watched this because all I'd seen about it, I shit you not, the descriptions that I'd seen about it, all they said was immigrants washed up on the shore of a sleepy town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we read
pretty
that
much
too.
That, right? And so, not to be shitty, but I was like, oh, okay, this seems like a rather treacle ABC show about half-drowned
That's what Shannon said too. She goes, I can't handle it tonight. I don't think I can handle this.
Exactly.
Right now.
I was like, I really don't want to watch this. And so after I watched the first episode, I think I messaged Kyle, like, way to bury the fucking lead, man. Steve Zahn time travel show. Yeah. That's all you had to
I
say.
I didn't remember his name. I was like, that thing you do.
Yeah. I love Steve Zahn. Yeah, all right. I'm so glad I'm not related to him because he would owe me so much money by now. I would just loan Steve Zahn money.
Yeah. I saw the log line for this back when it first came out. I don't remember who's doing it. I see Rob Bowman, who directed the X-Files movie. I don't know who the showrunner is on this. Dan Dworkin and Jay Beatty. I don't know what else they've done. I haven't looked it up. But I saw the log line, and it was like basically it's about immigrants – and I'm like, oh, okay, immigration, that makes sense. And I'm like, but the immigrants are escaping a war 180 years in the future. I'm like, oh, okay, that's different. And also, it does mean that they get to do – they do what sci-fi does really well, which is they get to do metaphor. Like they're going to tackle what immigration – immigration is kind of a hot-button topic right now for some reason. And
but in the first couple of episodes, I felt that they were remarkably light-handed with
they
it.
Are. They
and,
are.
And I'm appreciating that because you're right. This is the thing that sci-fi does really, really well.
Yeah.
It lets you tackle a topic that I might go – quit moralizing at me.
Yeah.
But instead I go, ooh, shiny parallel world.
Yeah.
Or shiny time travel.
Well, the funny thing is this reminds me of like the 4400 on USA. And
it reminds me of Continuum as well.
And Continuum, that was
which,
the other one
which
I was
opens
gonna
say. With a terrorist attack and people pop back chasing
We see a little bit of the future, but mostly we're seeing how the future comes to us. But Kyle, you were super into this, right? Like you really dug this.
I was very surprised.
Okay.
That's why I put the call out and I was like, TV dudes assemble. It's because, I definitely wasn't expecting something this interesting in kind of everything else that's being dropped right now. It does kind of make me wonder, you know, why this time of the year for this kind of a show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dan Dworkin also worked on The Surface and The Event. So this is
definitely. JB, the two of them worked together on The Event and Surface and Revenge, actually.
You know, I'm not going to be doing the show any favors, but I was just going through some of the actors.
Uh-huh.
You know where a handful of this cast came from?
No.
That failed Fox show APD.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that. A couple of these folks were from
The main actress who plays do we want to spoil this? Because this has the potential to be kind of one of those shows.
Honestly, I don't know if this will be the one that catches on, similar to The Event. Or, I mean,
here's the thing. I wouldn't have watched this. I would not have watched the second episode if I hadn't had the bit of the twist, knowing about the twist. I think that you need to know that twist before you really commit to it. I think it's worth spoiling.
Yeah, and they're not doing anything to promote this show.
No,
so
I don't give it much of a chance.
We're going to do you a service, listeners.
Yeah.
So the future they come from, they're running because there's these things called Apex, which is like the next step in human evolution. They're like they're super strong and they're really sexy.
Yeah,
they're disease resistant.
Yeah,
which is a big thing because there are some new diseases in the future. Yeah.
Well, they created
super gonorrhea.
So you find that out at the end of the second episode. They've talked about manacle disease,
Merkel's disease.
It makes this weird rash. It's like little circle grid.
Yeah, it's like the dragon skin thing from Game of Thrones.
And then once it happens, you're dead.
Yeah, once the rash is on there, like you're fucked.
They're like, the only thing you can do is run away.
So. Like you find out that like that's a disease, and everybody that's arrived here now is scared of it.
Yeah.
And then you find out that somebody's brought it back to now.
Yeah, and it's like, oh well, we just wiped all of humanity.
Basically, now we've kickstarted a plague centuries prior to it starting. And you find out that the Apex people created it to cull
regular
humans off the planet.
There's a couple big twists. One is that Reese, the one of the women who comes back with her daughter, mm-hmm. is Apex.
Yes.
And then she sort of turned on her people. The second episode is all about that.
I knew somebody was going to... Honestly, I thought it was going to be the little girl.
Yeah,
thought the little girl was going to be Apex.
Can I take a step back and just give kind of the setup the thing, like, visually that makes this show really interesting?
Start with Steve Zahn doing yoga.
So it starts with Steve Zahn doing yoga. So essentially you have this group of refugees that travels from the future, but when they end up in the past, they end up in the ocean, like under the water, like a
way
big
distance.
Like 450 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they appear like a little ways offshore and mm-hmm. underwater.
And most of them don't survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that they make note that like a lot of people didn't know. I mean, by the time you figured out you were underwater, you drowned.
Yeah.
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 Just that premise. So the show starts out, you see all these bodies floating in the water, and then the scene where they all wash up on the beach. I mean, it's really vivid imagery. I thought they did a good
like
job
that opening.
That.
Yeah. Zahn's called out as sheriff to look at one body that's washed up.
Yeah.
And then they notice there's another body a little further down the beach, and then his deputy points and they look out in the water. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really powerful shot. But then he loses control of that beach pretty quick to the feds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's when the show gets interesting is when the feds come in and then the twists and turns are coming with, you know, who's on what side?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's a big reveal with Jake Harnes, who I always love from The Shield, and that they reveal it. There's like several big reveals, and that's a big one of them, is Jake Harnes' character.
Well, and they actually did that. Didn't they do that at the beginning of the show? Like they flash forward?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the end of the show, it's resolved.
Yeah. I don't feel like this show got as good up. I mean, very few shows get as good a pilot as Lost.
No.
But this is definitely a show where the network went, what's our next Lost? Same as The Event, same as The Surface. And without a pilot to get those twists and get those hooks in, like without a first episode, the fact that you had to get through the first two episodes to get all those. Because by the end of episode two, I found myself going, okay, you've layered on enough shit now. Like, I don't think the rogue faction that's here is actually in support of the future anymore.
Yeah.
Like, even though I'm pretty sure they're Apex, I don't think they're actually with the future Apex. I think they just want to live here. But also, now I'm wondering, like, you know, you brought back a little girl that you've done some kind of cross-breedy kind of stuff with. Like, are you... I want to know the plan now.
It's getting weird.
I want to know the plan. It's got some wayward
moving
like,
parts.
My issue, I think, is that I feel like it's not mysterious enough. Like, I feel like I can see where a lot of it's going.
Yeah, and I...
They almost gave me too much.
And we've watched a few shows recently where I felt like I could see it going and they've zigged where I thought they were going to zag.
Yeah.
I don't trust ABC to do that.
Right.
I think what I told Randy was like, I'm loving this. I'm definitely going to watch season one. That said, I fully expect them to shit the bed on their own premise after this season and zag where they should have, you know, do something where I go, oh, that's what you're going to do with that?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's one obvious thing I see, and then, you know, maybe a less obvious one. But I think the first season ends with another group coming back, another crossing.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So you start with that. I believe that's where they're going to end, and then they're going to try to world build off of that. If it gets that far, I mean, this could get canceled in a couple episodes.
It could.
But my prediction, his partner at the sheriff department, I think he's an Apex.
You think he's been embedded this whole time?
Yeah, they did this little wink and nod in the first episode where he's like, I can't have too much sugar. You know, I won't quit talking.
Dr. Burns at work. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope they do something really cool. I mean, I don't expect it to make a second season. I feel like this is going to go the way of Surface or the
I was kind of thinking the same thing.
Or flash forward.
What's funny is those all sound like they could be names for this show. I will say the production art for like the marketing looks really cool.
Yeah.
That circular beach thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty neat. You should check that out if you're listening. Well, I guess everybody's listening.
I love Steve Zahn. I love time travel. I'm definitely going to give this a few episodes.
I haven't decided yet if I'm going to keep with it. There's so much else on, but it's solid. It's better than I expected to be.
I also really dug season one of Wayward Pines.
Oh, yeah,
and
me too.
Even though that kind of fell apart after its mystery got revealed, and this may go the same way. I feel like this is kind of going to go the same way.
Yeah.
I really dug it while it happened, so I'm hoping I get at least that level of enjoyment out of this.
Wayward Pines had Carla Gugino, though, and that's what kept me watching.
True.
All right. Finally, I want to mention a show, Killing Eve, on BBC America. I think I'm the only one who's seen it so far. But this was a surprise. This is it's one of the co-producers is the star and writer of Fleabag.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is about to be the robot, Lando's robot in Solo.
I know, I saw that.
Oh, nice.
So
glad we took this mission.
It's got some. It's got some other some of the notable EastEnders people. And some other British shows.
I loved Fleabag and Crashing.
Yeah.
Her Crashing.
And Phoebe Waller-Bridge is one of the writers. Rob Williams is one of the others. So, and this is, it stars Sandra Oh, who has been sort of missing from TV for a while. And she is sort of she's not exactly a CIA analyst. She's sort of an assistant to a guy who is in the analyst division. But she's definitely not just like an assistant. There's just like, she's trying to move up in the world a little bit. And then there's this French assassin played by, I think it's Jodie Comer. So it's sort of a dual show. So we're seeing all these exotic assassinations and this sort of hollowed out woman who's an assassin who is a sociopath and very good at her job and is starting to enjoy it and is starting to sort of show off a little bit. Like, she's told to make something look like a suicide. She does not make something look like a suicide. It looks like a massive murder because she's getting to the point where she kind of wants to be caught or wants to be have a challenge. And at the same time, Sandra Oh's E sort of has a fascination with assassins as if they were like serial killers. It's sort of so it seems like maybe she's going to wind up sort of in almost a Hannibal Lecter style thing where she's sort of interested in following this thing. But the really interesting thing about this is that Eve is she's not really qualified for this job. Like, she's smart and she's definitely being drawn into it more. She's the only one who spots that it's a female assassin. And in this, I don't know if this is real world or not, but they call out that like there are three female assassins in the world. There's like two of them are dead and one that's this, it's not her. And so she gets this idea, this woman is definitely a female assassin and she's chasing that down. Her boss is telling her it's not. And he sort of lies to her and tells her there's CCTV footage there isn't. And then she finally figures out that no, this is a female assassin and she really wants to like chase this down and follow it. And there's some stuff going on with like her husband and there's like a Polish witness and her husband's Polish and so is her like nephew. And so she like calls him in to do some translation of like street Polish. It's very fast moving. It's fun, but it's also sort of horrific. Some of the assassinations are particularly horrific. But it's a fun sort of thriller. I don't know where they're going with it, but it's a really good first episode. I
kind of feel like it's going to pair well with Barry.
It does pair well with Barry. It does, because it's all about sort of like, what do you do when you're in it? What kind of person do you have to be to kill people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I said I didn't watch this, which I didn't, but Sandra Oh did an interview on NPR where they talked about the show, and this does sound really interesting.
Yeah, it's really great.
Like right up my alley.
Yeah, and it's BBC. It's going to be a short-lived, you know, it'll be a short season. And
they know when to stop.
They know when to stop. And Sandra Oh on TV is fantastic. So, all right. Let's take a break, and then we will do listener questions. So we're going to do listener questions. Every week, if you go on Facebook, I put up a post that's telling you what shows we're talking about, who's going to be on the show, and suggest you send us some questions, whether it might be about the shows that week or just general questions. We'll read them out, answer them on the air. So first off, we got a question from Michael Gustini who says, two of the best comedies on TV right now are The Mick and AP Bio, which basically take Dee and Dennis from It's Always Sunny and drop them in classic sitcom scenarios, Misbehaving Family and School. If you had to create sitcoms for the rest of the Sunny characters, what would they be? Oh, that's a good question.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, I got this one.
Go ahead.
So Charlie
yeah.
would be our main character's idiot brother, who is living back home because he has to by court order because he has failed out of every conceivable police academy, security, military, discharged. Everything short of getting thrown in jail for it, but yeah. very much like never come back here, never tell anyone you studied here. You did not pass and you cannot carry a weapon. But he's Charlie's just desperate to be some kind of security badass, bounty hunter, or something. And his brother runs an actual PI firm. Which is boring God. As balls. Like, it's paperwork yeah. And
cheating wives.
Yeah, and dull. And so Charlie moves back home with his Hollywood sock and can only go places, but like has to get a job at his brother's thing to help him out on his court stuff and ends up constantly like trying to Beverly Hills Cop the situation up and just like wrecking shit. We call it Wild Card.
I would watch that.
Nice.
I would definitely watch that.
Danny DeVito needs to work as a mechanic for Ubers in like, I don't know, like an Uber hub.
Okay. All right.
Where like all the Uber cars come to there. And it's you'd call it Uber.
Are you just wanting Danny DeVito
like
to go
a better
back
taxi?
Yeah, it's just an updated taxi.
Updated taxi. All right. So let's see. Who have you left me? Well, Rickety Cricket, I suppose.
Oh, and Mac.
And Mac. Oh, Mac.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Mac's got to be a gym teacher. You've got to go. Actually, no, not gym teacher. I think you go. He is a coach of a peewee football league, and he's like this really aggressive guy who just drives the kids. And he's always dreaming of his high school glory when he was like a quarterback. And so he wants to impress everybody about what a big man he is. When in fact, it's just kind of sad that he's still trying to recapture his sports glory.
And yeah, kind of eastbound and down.
Yeah, yeah. You wrap a cast of kids around just like AP Bio, but you go more athletic. Bad News Bears with it.
So like Hardball or
You know, I was thinking for Mac like a Magic Mike, but like he's not hot enough to be one of the dancers. He's like a waiter or something. He's not even a bartender. He's not a dancer. He's a waiter, and everybody around him is just super muscular and like he's trying to make it in the a male dancing world.
So basically Champions, but with a male strip club instead of a gym.
Yeah.
Jonathan Habmichael says, "Hi, dudes. Many shows enjoy having a holiday special or two in their tenure. What non-episodic show do you want to have a standalone holiday special? Bonus points if it involves an overlooked holiday like Arbor Day."
I used to love Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place just because their Halloween episodes were fully standalone and usually they'd get killed or brain switched.
Community did that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fun question.
Yeah. So who should get a Halloween special? Like what show right now that's on should get a Halloween special?
Oh, yeah. Like something that would be off season for it?
Yeah. I feel like I
Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale Halloween special. Oh my god. It's just zombies.
No.
Zombies.
What it is they're in an alternate reality where none of those events happen, but they play the characters from the show and they play out the same drama, but in a party, like a one night Halloween party scenario.
I'm gonna go with You're the Worst Valentine's Day special.
Nice.
Where it's all about them getting together and living through Valentine's Day.
Oh man, I am running a blank right now.
I know. I'm trying to come up with shows that would be good to have. Like, what sitcoms am I watching? Because now I have AP Bio and The Mick running through my head. I'm trying to think.
Oh.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh, they do Halloween episodes every year, and they're great.
Legion should do an Easter episode where they do like Jesus Christ Superstar, but with the characters.
Oh my god!
In like a hallucination. Actually, I guess Legion can have every episode be a standalone if they want.
True. Who needs a Christmas episode? Like Doctor Who always has the famous Christmas specials. I feel like there's got to be something out there that needs a Christmas show.
Law and Order SVU. Yeah, rape at a CentaCon.
All right, Jonathan Huffnagel says, "Dear TV dudes, I want you to imagine for a moment that from this day forward, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is in total sync with the Marvel TV Universe. The same continuity, the same good quality, and characters can cross over easily. But most importantly, the flaw has been fixed now, and they are decent, if not brilliant. Netflix series have had amazing moments, some dumb ones, and plenty of we forgive, oh wait, it's all good now. It seems the only thing Reality Gem erased was The Inhumans. Legion donated blood to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so that both shows are now in sync, but it was a necessary sacrifice. Also, all the bad Marvel movies disconnected from the MCU are now part of it, and were at least as good as the worst of the actual MCU movies. Same can be said of all these TV shows and any future shows they may choose to produce. This means there are already good Blade, X-Men, and Fantastic Four movies, and the tone and theme connects flawlessly into the MCU's continuity. In this near-perfect MCU and Marvel TV synced world, when character properties not yet covered and improved upon, would you want to see get made as the next great Marvel TV shows?
You know that first version of The Matrix where everybody woke up?
Yeah.
This is that. I can't. I just can't believe it. My brain won't accept.
Yeah, my brain wouldn't accept it either. There's no bad.
But Moon Knight was the first one that jumped to mind. I'd like to see that character done really well.
I would like to see Netflix do it, and not in a way that where they're embarrassed by it. Like, I want it to be gritty and street level and violent, but I want it to be in the goddamn costume.
Yeah, I want both X Factors actually. I would like to see an incredible style like the original X-Men. You don't need to have done an X-Men show.
Yeah.
Just you set up who these guys are and that they used to be the original team, and now there's a hot younger team, and do the original run of X-Factor.
Yep.
Separately, I would love to see X-Factor Investigations with Madrox the Multiple Man, and that whole run with the Singularity and all that shit was great.
Oh, I could totally see that. Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Woman and the Porcupine.
Oh, yeah, that Spider-Woman
run. For real. Oh, yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah.
It'd be Sex in the City with a superhero.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
And not shitty.
I would also love to see She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
Jessica Walters.
We need a She-Hulk show, a series, especially if you do one that's – if the MCU had been around as long as he's suggesting here, which means going back to like 2000 if X-Men had been good.
Mm-hmm.
If we're 18 years in, you could do a She-Hulk that's like the Dan Slott She-Hulk where it's like all the weird stuff. The two-gun kid is a paralegal for the past and all that stuff.
Yeah,
like,
just Ally McBeal goes off the rails.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I would love to see that. I think that covers a lot of the big bases. I mean, that's most everybody. I think I'd want to see an actual Marvel Knights, like the Defenders, like I want to see, but good. I mean, I want to see all those characters together. I guess if the assumption is that the Defenders was actually good.
I would also enjoy seeing Mike Allred, X-Force.
Oh, yeah.
When shit got real weird with Dupe and when they were a fully, like, for-the-cameras superhero team. I feel like something close to that has to have been half-ass attempted on TV maybe somewhere.
Yeah.
It's basically also Youngblood, but I'd rather see it done well.
I wish it didn't cost so much money to get like the Iron Man armor to create that effect, because what's nice about creating shows that have mechs or characters like that is that you can have an actor that might cost a little bit more money that'll do the show because he's just, you know, sitting in an air conditioned room, you know.
Pretending he's in a suit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need more pretending we're in suits shows.
I'd also like a standalone Ghost Rider show.
Yeah, same here.
But I don't want
in this world there were two good Ghost Rider movies.
Oh yeah.
Right, you're right. Matrix is the best comparison. There's no way we
keep
would buy
waking
this.
Up, man.
Yeah. Keep waking
how do they,
up.
How do they know what tasty, or whatever the.
Alec Miracle says, if you could choose one character from any show ever to grab a beer with, who would it be? I think I would choose Mr. Echo from Lost or Brian the Dog from Family Guy. Those are some weird calls, man.
Yeah,
Mr. Ooh. Echo, that's a weird call.
Also, I don't think Brian's gonna have a beer. He's gonna have a martini.
Is he in recovery?
Right? He's probably in recovery. Way to go, man.
See, I feel like the actor is really easy to nail down, but the character, do you do Ted Danson from Good Place?
Right.
Ted Danson from Cheers, or Ted Danson from Bored to Death, which I think is the correct answer.
No, Ted Danson from Bored to Death you grab marijuana with.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Ted Danson from Cheers would be a funny guy to go drinking with, but you would definitely wind up... He would go home with three women, and you'd be left with none. That is how that would go a night with
Ted. I would tell that story every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and you can't drink with Ted Danson from Cheers.
Well, that's true. You can't.
Yeah,
he's in recovery, man.
Sam falling off the wagon's bad.
It's funny because I'm trying to think, like, who would I want to go out with and like, have a good time with? Like, if you go out with Jimmy from The Mick, that's not going to end well for you.
Mm-mm.
He's the one who's going to get beat up, but it's still not going
to
end well.
You're going to go to jail, and he's going to wiggle out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not going to – he has nothing to lose. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't want to go out with the Seinfeld people. Like, I'll get killed, and they'll film it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Jason from The Good Place. He'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Go to a Jacksonville Jaguars game with him.
You guys are definitely getting arrested at the end of that. Like, someone's getting arrested. There's a Molotov cocktail getting thrown.
The first one that popped to mind for me, I want to have a beer with Poe from Altered Carbon.
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
I want to drink with the Poe Hotel
in
Altered
fun.
Carbon.
Of course, yeah, they don't fall in love with you.
He's fucking rad, though. And I want to know more stories of the card games with him and the other AIs and shit. Like, I think he's got a whole life to talk about that's rad. Other one would be Harry from Night Court.
Oh, yeah. That's
which
a good one.
I had the same thought, like Harry Anderson from, but no, I would just sit and drink with Harry Anderson. And I would drink with Harry from Night, like with Judge Stone from Night Court.
Yep.
Yeah, Anderson or Stone, either one.
All right.
Same with John Astin. I would drink with John Astin from Night Court or John Astin as Gomez Adams.
Gomez Adams. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it'd be cool to have the first beer with one of those Stranger Things kids. 11's 21st birthday.
Benjamin Hummel for our last question says, or Benjamin Hamill says, in honor of the terrific first season of Counterpart, who are some actor actresses that you would like to see play dual roles in a show? Gillian Anderson. First thing I thought of was Gillian Anderson. I think she'd be great.
What?
Yeah.
From The X-Files?
Yeah.
What?
Gillian Anderson's great. The X-Files aren't good enough for her.
I'm trying to think, like, who are actors that can really, that I feel like can really nail that.
That
like,
duality?
Yeah. Like Nicolas Cage in Adaptation. You know, that, like, holy shit, you are two different extremes.
Yeah, yeah. Or in Face Off.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. The guy I interviewed, Giovanni Goprati, this past week, he played twins that were opposites.
Okay.
And we talked a little bit about that. He's done that twice now.
I'm trying to think. Bryan Cranston would be interesting.
Yes.
Because he can play a variety of roles.
He could be so milquetoast and can also be Heisenberg.
You know who could be the new Bryan Cranston?
Who's that?
With the right role, Ty Burrell.
Yeah, Ty Burrell. Ty Burrell's got chops. Especially,
too, like talking about like a duality type thing playing across each other.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see like a really serious Ty Burrell. Like, wasn't he in the Dawn of the Dead remake?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, like that guy and then the Modern Family Ty Burrell.
Yeah.
That'd
be
good.
I feel like... From Billions, either Malin Ackerman or the other wife in that one, whose name I for Wendy, but I can't remember the actress's name.
Oh yeah,
either one of them could
Wendy
play
Rhodes.
Roles.
Who's it plays Kimmy Schmidt?
Oh, Ellie Kemper.
Ellie Kemper. I would love to see Ellie Kemper play like a really sweet and nice person and a twin sister that is
just
good son
mean.
Terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. all right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. Thank
good
you
questions.
All for chiming in. Good questions. Kyle, good to see you again.
Oh, guys, always.
Les, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Benjamin. And until next time,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.